Chapter 14. Standing with the shower head pointing right into his face, Ron would close his eyes and mouth and take it for as long as he could. He liked it better when it didn't make him choke. It was a tradition to give his cock several extra soapings on the night of the date. It reminded him of doing warm-ups prior to a game. After he rinsed his crotch, he re-soaped his pubic hair in slow circles that started on the outside and worked their way into the center. He took hold of it, bent it up, and squeezed it so he could see down into the hole at the top. He rubbed it with a bar of soap like he was shining it up, and then moved it toward the bristling water with a trace of timidity. He closed his eyes again as the sensations traveled through his body. He felt like he was in a cloud ship when he turned off the water. The mirror was a portal he was anxious to have cleared. His feet slipped on the wet tile. He ran the sink water until it was ice cold on his hand and drank 4 or 5 glasses in gulping swallows. Sweat and dripping shower water mixed with rivulets, making lakes at his toes. He rubbed a towel across his shoulders as if he were trying to take off a layer of skin. He opened the door a crack and watched the escaping steam. "My stomach sticks out again," he thought. He pulled in the muscles as tightly as he could and struck an Atlas pose with his arms. He always looked very strong when he did that. Ron sat on the edge of the tub and pictured Veronica's ass. He spread the towel he'd been using on the floor and began to dry again with a second towel. The word "dipsy doodle" danced across her swinging cheeks as he remembered the way she walked. He grabbed the baby powder and doused his genitalia with 4 puffy shakes. He stood up, trying to avoid the sight of his gut. Toothpaste tasted good, and he gave his teeth 2 extra cleanings to ensure against bad breath. He rolled deodorant sumptuously on his still dripping armpit. He rolled it experimentally on the patch of hair on his chest, but he immediately decided it was too sticky and rinsed it off with a scowl that lasted as long as the rinsing process took. Stretching his jockeys over his still wet ass, he headed for his room. The cool air outside greeted him with the aroma of the meatloaf his mother was making. He licked his lips. Hoping to find something he'd never seen before, Ron threw open his closet. A row of blacks and blues hung neatly on hangers. They called for starched shirts, sweaters, or sports jackets. "Fuck them," he said under his breath. He wanted clothes that didn't have to be cleaned and pressed after each outing. Stuff that could be crumpled up and kept in drawers. Stuff that wouldn't make him feel like an old man who worked from 9 to 5. He slammed the closet door and brought out a new pair of jeans he'd bought a couple of weeks ago. He hated wearing jeans for the first time. He still hadn't shaken the feeling that they were unlucky for him. He'd be wearing jeans on the Sunday morning when they discovered he'd been taking money from his mother's piggy bank. They called his father, his real father, to come down and punish him. They made him wait in bed. It was just the day before they agreed to start giving him an allowance, the lack of which had been the reason for his clipping their money. Laying in bed, he kept feeling the harsh scratching sensations that the new jeans were making on his legs. His father was out golfing, and his father's wife said he wouldn't be back until late that afternoon. He stayed in bed all day, waiting. They let him get up, eat, and go to the bathroom, but no one said a word to him. When Harry arrived, he just walked into Ron's room, took off his belt. He asked Ron which hand he'd taken the money with. Ron couldn't remember and raised his right arm. He closed his eyes and heard the skin crack. He heard himself say, "Ow," before he felt much pain. He was determined that he wasn't going to cry or move his hand. It was the intense burning that finally made him draw it back and roll over while his father continued to strap him through the new jeans. When he was finished, Harry led Ron out of the house by his other arm and left him standing in the hallway of his mother's basement apartment. Ron rubbed his face on the cool plaster walls. He could feel wetness on his face and neck and flashes of pain running through his arm like jolts of electricity. The welts were puffing out. He slipped to the floor, but the blue jeans were digging into the welts and he couldn't see on his legs and ass. His father came out of the apartment, walked Ron stiffly to the car. Ron was sniffling as he got in. I was playing in back of the big closet. I saw the bank laying there for a long time and didn't touch it. Then one day I was playing pirate, and I thought it would be fun to adventure to go to Levy's candy store and buy soda with the treasure I'd captured. I just kept doing that every day. That's no excuse for stealing, his father said firmly. Since you're obviously too much for your mother to handle, I think you're going to spend some time at Boys Town. Well, they'll learn you a real lesson. Ron was silent until he felt the car going over the bridge that led to Kearney. He'd seen the large letters spelling out Boys Town from the opposite bank of the river. He felt himself slide down to the floor on the passenger side of the car. The heater irritated his skin through the blue jeans. Can I come to stay with you? He asked. I don't want a thief in my house, said a sharp voice he was afraid to look at. He could think of nothing to say and slumped against the car and let the scenery move past without noticing it for the first time that he could ever remember. They stopped the car and he heard his father's voice say, "Let's go." But he was too numb to move. He felt his father's door slam and felt the door against his back being opened. He still didn't move. "Don't be so dramatic about this," said Harry. "You make a federal case out of everything." In the end, he took Ron up to the door, and when the boy began to beg, brought him back home. If it was up to him, he'd have left his son there for a day or two, but his ex-wife would have never stood for such a thing. She had spoiled the shit out of him anyway. No wonder he lay there like a blubbering baby. No son of his should act this way about anything. When he was left alone, the kid was really tough, but his mother just wouldn't leave him alone. She always gave in to him. He didn't blame Ronald. Kids try to get away with everything they can if you don't draw a line and just not allow them to cross it. What the hell was he doing playing in the back of a closet anyway? The kid should be out playing football. Well, things were going to be very different starting now. George handed the keys to Ron and said that the gas tank was full, and he expected the car returned that way. "Pay attention to what he says, and it won't be so difficult for you to get the car the next time you need it," said Marjorie. "Okay," said Ron. He would have said anything, and they both knew it. But at least this time, he had to stand still and listen without one of his smart-ass answers. "How do I look?" he asked after they'd finished their warnings. "You look fine," she said sternly, then had to smile at the way his face adopted the innocent pose that he'd been using his whole life. She swore that when he made that face, she would sometimes forget time and where she was. She told herself again that there were plenty of years for him to find out what he wanted to be and who he really was. She wouldn't tell him again just yet that leaving IBM had been a terrible mistake. She'd let him find that out for himself. We always said he wanted to find things out. IBM was a terrific company, and to work for them and their benefits had been outstanding. He assured her that it was just an educational leave of absence. But how would it look for him to take off all this time after being there for just 2 years. She looked at the window in time to see the white fins bounce as the car left the driveway. She heard a metallic scrape and saw his head bounce off the roof of the interior. Son of a bitch, she thought. This was the last time he was going to drive that car until he learned to use it properly. She was glad that George hadn't seen or heard it. The phone was ringing. No, Hank, he isn't. He has a date, she said. Hank walked out of his door, not sure he was going, but certain that he wanted to be out of the house before his parents got back from shopping. There were two records that he wanted to pick up, and he had been meaning to go out to Arrow Electronics and see if they'd gotten the new Bose speakers in yet. Hank smiled at the way his engine turned over. Maybe it didn't have Chevy seats, but he's sure it was going to start whenever he turned the key, and that was what was really important. He liked the distinctive tapping of the engine so much that sometimes he left the radio off and listened to it. He set his course for Sam Goody's, thinking about how he'd drop by and see TJ at the night league later on. He withdrew what Ron would have called a toothpick joint from his pocket and lit it with a smooth click of his lighter. It was just enough for a nice buzz. He told himself with an away we go feel as he sailed up the parkway, heading north. Veronica met Ron at the door with a friendly small smile and a large hello. Their phone conversation had been short, and she couldn't even remember what he looked like that well. Ron smiled from the other side of the screen door, and she decided that she liked his row of white, straight teeth. She hoped he wasn't an octopus. She left him out on the porch and grabbed her thin white sweater before her father had a chance to say to her mother, "Natalie, isn't the boy Veronica's going out with even going to come in for a moment?" She tossed a grateful goodbye to her mother and assured them both that she wouldn't be home too late. Ron thought that she looked great, and let her get a couple of steps in front of him so he could sneak looks at her dreamy ass. Veronica saw him look and thought, uh-oh, but gave her hips an extra little more of an involuntary swing. Her backside was stretched out in green corduroy, and she wore a tucked-in, button-down shirt. Ron looked back over his shoulder and saw her parents watching them. He walked quickly so that he could catch up to her by the time they got to the car. Veronica's mother seemed to be waving sadly to her daughter as they got into the car. She turned back to them with the innocence of a well-shaped lamb and bawled silently in their direction. Natalie bleated back at her daughter, and Veronica's father offered to stop the whole thing before they had a chance to pull away. He'd already seen enough to know what Ron's interest was. I mean, who the hell ever heard of it, Natalie? A good girl goes off with some punk she knows for less than 5 minutes? Think of it, Natalie. What kind of a guy waits for that time of day to make a proposal? The use of the word made Natalie smile. To a girl he'd never met. A pathetic, desperate character. That's the kind of person climbing into his car with our daughter right now. Oh, stop being silly, said Natalie. He's probably desperate because he's some kind of a weirdo. I'm telling you, that's the story with this bird. Did you see him drooling over her? And the way you've raised that girl, she's gullible enough to be taken advantage of. You're not fair, said Natalie. I remember how you used to drool over me. She closed the door, wishing that she were seeing an exciting new person for a change. Not knowing what to expect, Veronica began the conversation formally. Did you have any trouble with the directions? Nah, said Ron. But I lost the directions to the beer blast, so we'll just head in that general way and find out what happens. Veronica wasn't so sure about how to take that remark. She thought he seemed like a very confident boy. Sometimes they were the best. Sometimes they were the absolute worst. "I thought you knew where we were going," she said with a slight stiffness in her voice. Ron grinned at her gently. "I do, but I'm a little disorganized sometimes, and I forget to bring the directions with me." "You know," said Veronica, "I think I've got a copy of the map." She dug into her purse and came out with it. "I used it to write somebody's phone number on." Ron felt a pang for a reason he didn't understand. He didn't really want her to have anybody else's phone number with her while she was out with him. "Whose number is it?" "Just someone I met at school," she teased. She wasn't going to tell him that it was a girl from her biology class. Ron's instinct said that it didn't matter whose number it was, so he let it slide. It wasn't going to affect him, and besides, he liked the idea of her being bright enough to have the directions with her. It showed resourcefulness and the ability to be prepared that he admired and lacked. It became evident that she was the kind of person who fit well into things, the type of person who wouldn't understand what had happened to him the night before. Ron smiled and took out his cigarettes. He offered one to Veronica, who surprised him by taking it. He definitely figured her for a non-smoker, certainly not the type who would take anybody's. He gave her his lighter and smiled at her awkwardness with it. She gave it back with a little girl look that tickled him. He flicked it on easily and thought about how simple things were more fun with a girl. TJ was in the middle of the third frame of the first game when Hank got to the alleys and had just thrown his third consecutive nine count. First the 10-pin, then the 7, and now the 5-pin confronted him like a wobbly vision. Hank watched him convert the spare and walk away, rubbing his eyes, shaking his head, with the hope that not only the pins would disappear, that he would wake up and find out that things had turned differently than they had. One day, he would get up and throw a strike that would cause time to snap its fingers right along with him. It would be the way the genie popped out of a bottle. But TJ was going to do the popping and wind up in exotic lands, walking down the beach with white leather shoes and a walking stick. TJ had told Ron about that dream on Sunday night after they'd closed the doors at Wellmont and been there for the real money matches. Nobody cared who drank what at the bar as long as the bartender got to tack a quarter onto each drink to make up for his time. Hank and TJ were huddled over TJ's 10th drink when he told him secretly why he snapped his fingers after each strike. The information stuck with Hank and caused him to view TJ as an H.G. Wells type character. TJ liked Hank because he was a smart kid who knew how to keep his mouth shut and never brought their friendship around to matters that dealt with money. When TJ had fixed Hank's car and wouldn't take any money, the kid made sure to buy him a couple of good bottles. They laughed at each other's jokes, and TJ had the comfortable feeling that there was something about his view of the world that Hank admired. Under normal circumstances, TJ wouldn't let anyone admire him, not with him being a semi-bum, loafer, crook, but Hank had been at the alleys long enough to have seen worse. "Hanky, it's been so long since I seen you. I told myself that you must be some sort of ghost." Hank stopped and dramatically patted his chest, shook his head, and smiled at TJ. "No, I seem to be alive." TJ laughed a short, gritty chuckle and waved for a waitress. Hank slid into his spectator seat, lit a cigarette, and put his hand under his chin with an easy motion. TJ broke out a cigar and asked Hank if he had a light. Hank never recalled TJ in need of anything and moved quickly. TJ puffed dreamily on his cigar and asked Hank, since he hated to turn around and look behind himself, if the waitress had moved into the area. Hank was a little nervous because he was still technically breaking the law, but TJ said that he didn't mind doing it and that it didn't matter so often that Hank was mostly at ease. He realized that he never thought about being underage with Joe Lee. Ron's voice popped into his head, telling him that that was because she was old enough for the both of them. TJ got up to bowl, and Hank admired his economic style with connoisseurship. Anybody that didn't really know bowling would say that TJ looked funny because he took only 3 steps and didn't seem to bring the ball back high enough to get a good swing. But Hank knew that it was all there. The necessary motion was concentrated into an easy walk and roll. TJ looked as effortless as he felt when he walked along Joe Lee. The ball was a strike, and TJ snapped his fingers and hitched his belt. Hank felt his mind traveling down a corridor. At the end, he could see himself playing in the sand with Joe Lee. Her silver hair was in pigtails, and she was wearing brightly colored sundress with flowers on the pockets. Hank was holding himself by a shovel and a pail that for some reason he couldn't figure out he wasn't wearing glasses.
"You're off into stratosphere, Hank."
"I think I'm in love, T," said Hank, taking his first sip of gin giblet.
"Take something for it, as quick as you can," said TJ, in a voice that Hank realized wasn't supposed to be comical. "Go pick up a slut that you can really knock it into better than you do right now. And in the long run, even if you give her $40 or $50 for a specialty, you'll be better off."
"I wouldn't be too good at that kind of thing, T. I couldn't work with a whore."
"Hanky, I've seen the look that you've got on your face plastered on my own kisser. And what I'm telling you is the best advice I ever gave to anybody. If you let yourself get involved with a woman that makes you feel like you're feeling, chances are she'll squeeze off your cock in 6 months.
TJ's imagery left Hank speechless. He trusted T's opinion, and now, without even knowing what Hank considered the bad part of things, TJ told him that it was all fucked up.
"I don't understand," said Hank. "Why are you worried about me feeling the way I do?" "You're in no condition to feel your way through anything. You're more fucked up than you are when you and that lunatic fool friend of yours go out and smoke those funny-looking cigarettes."
"T, I haven't even told you the drawbacks of the situation yet. I haven't knocked your socks off and told you who she is."
"You think I'm stupid, Hanky? If I didn't know who you was talking about, do you think I'd react this way?"
Hank looked at TJ with disbelief.
"It's around the alleys, Hank. You better think fast because her husband's gonna know real quick."
Hank was impaled on an arrow. He emptied the gimlet into his mouth as a dull throb started up the back of his throat. It must have been Ron who betrayed him. How could anybody else find out what was going on? He smiled to himself with the thought that he would poison the bastard. He would just watch him curl up like a dead leaf on the floor of the luncheonette.
"Where'd you hear about it, T?"
"The insurance men were teasing her about her new boyfriend when they were in for lunch. Joey Face asked her if she would sit on his knob if he frizzed his hair and started ordering fruit cocktails. She got embarrassed and told him to fuck himself. She wouldn't even go back to their table. She made the cook
bring your food over and wouldn't take the $3 tip they left her. Then I hears Norman and Cy talking about how you spend more time than money in the place and that they don't want any trouble, so that maybe it would be better if they just kept you out. Hank sat there like he'd been lured into a showing of This Is Your Life. He realized for the first time all the Wellmont people, including TJ, were alike. One thing that everybody's happy about, though, you're not a fag, Hank. Hank stared into his ice cubes as TJ went to throw his ball. He contemplated suicide. He thought of selling his car for as much as it would take to buy enough heroin for 5,000 people, and trick Ron into splitting it with him, just to see the look on the asshole's face when he told them what they'd just eaten. TJ threw his ball and a wiggly 5-7 collapsed for his first double. He snapped his fingers as Hank thought about the dying. It was no great solace that everybody was relieved that he wasn't a fag. He knew he wasn't a fag. The bitch who'd started that rumor was just a crazy girl who he didn't want to have anything to do with. After convincing him that she was his friend and no longer interested in having him as a boyfriend, she spent the next 3 years telling everyone she met that he was a fag. Then Donald Lewis had gotten up the guts to ask him if it was the truth while they were standing at a bus stop with about 8 other kids. Hank had tried with Mr. Clean Memory Cleanser to scrub away the image of how he'd been too shocked to answer her. He thought that Donna was probably engaged in some kind of a leftover grammar school behavior, or that it was a joke that he wasn't falling for. He stood there stubbornly, waiting in the awkward tension that followed her question. He grimaced his most definite no, but he knew that he was marked as some kind of a deviant forever. He tried to snap his mind back to Joe Lee on the beach, where they were dancing like gods who were pulling the earth together with their movements. You see what I mean, Hank? You could have been hit by a car just now, and you wouldn't have even known it. Hank needed a cigarette. He steadied his gaze by fixing it on the overhead scoreboard and saw that TJ had just completed his first game. How'd I miss the rest of your frames? He asked. You had better get used to it, Hanky, because this is just the beginning for you. TJ puffed on his cigar, and the waitress brought their second round of drinks. Hank paid closer attention to the second game, but the idea of everybody at the bowling alley knowing that he was going out was taking over his mind. The fact that Ron had sold him out and he had been stupid enough to tell the asshole left him feeling like a two-day-old a cup of coffee in a hot room. Maybe he should stop Joe Lee from ruining her life by becoming involved with a buffoon like himself. Why should she risk the only security she had in the world to involve herself with a fishbowl clown? She isn't any good, Hanky. Hank noticed that TJ always looked sinister when he tried to sound sincere. Do you have any idea of how many guys have had their pud in her patch? Hank stared at his new ice cubes. Just at Wellmont, there are 3 guys she gave blowjobs to when they drove her home. Why should I even believe that? Hank asked. Everybody at Wellmont lies through their teeth. Hank stared at the alley in front of him. His eyes slid down the oil wood. When he came to the pins, he punched them, one at a time. They had taken on the appearance of Wellmont characters. The guy who told me right out was Pete, the bartender. Joe Lee told him about you. You know why? Because she had to get him out of the way to make room for you. Hank liked Pete. Somehow, it didn't matter that Pete had been seeing Joe Lee. Then TJ, just as suddenly, changed his mood. Ah, everybody's got the right to be stupid for the right reason. Right, Hanky? I guess it's what makes things interesting. I'm not going to say one more dark word about her, Hank. TJ put down his cigar and walked away to throw his ball.